Welcome back, listeners. My name is Jackson Vickery, and I am the host and producer of the JV Club podcast. On this episode, I spoke to Oscar-nominated editor Spencer Averick about his work on Origin. Very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Jackson. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm pretty good. Thanks.
Good. Yeah. How's this time of year treating you, especially with the film coming out?
It's pretty exciting. Mm. You know, Christmas and the movies coming out and all the holiday parties. Mm. But I'm excited for the movie to come out. It's been a long time coming, you know.
Yeah.
Let the world see it.
Mm. Yeah, no, I watched it last night, and I was telling Natasha last night how I've been eagerly, once it was announced, I was like, most anticipated of the year. Like, I love Ava's work so much.
Mm.
And I listened to the audiobook of Cass back, I guess, in maybe 2021. And I was just so stirred and shaken and sort of just reframed by that whole book.
That's a good word to use, reframed. That's a good word, yeah.
Yeah, and it just, I mean, and I think you guys just did such a wonderful job with the movie. I mean, obviously it's not an adaptation, but I mean, a recreation. And I thought it was just absolutely spectacular. And I mean,
thank you.
I don't know how you guys did it, because I have spoken to the costume designer for a previous project, and she was just telling me all about flying all across the world for this, and how it was just a jet setting adventure, and just how getting this done was just, I don't know how you guys did it, to be perfectly honest. But
you know, sometimes I don't know either. You know, it's so intense when you're in it, and then you know, that's all you think about. And I think about it all, you know, on the weekends and how to make it better. And then, you know, when I get out of it, it's like, yeah, I don't even, it's such a blur, you know, it's such a step-by-step detailed process that I don't know either. I don't know, because it was a really long rough cut. They shot a lot of footage. So it was for Ava and I, it was the longest rough cut we've ever had. And I remember just, you know, you just don't know how you can ever get it down. It seems impossible. You know, it's like, okay, I guess we're going to have a 4-hour movie. You know, there's just no way around it. But then you just, you know, you just work it and work it, you know, and then hopefully you get something at the end.
Mm. Yeah. And so, I mean, tackling Cass, well, I mean, Origin. But I mean, where did you sort of first hear about the genesis of this project, and were you familiar with Cast the book prior to working on the film?
No, I wasn't. I was familiar with the book, but I had not read it. And you know, Ava told me, and I think like everyone else, I was like, how are we doing this? You know, what is this? Okay, it sounds big, and it feels like a natural progression from 13th in a way. Mm. We dealt with race, you know, in America, and sort of the history of race in America and slavery up till mass incarceration. And so this idea of Cast felt like the natural evolution and sort of the bigger picture look at it. But I had not read it. And so I really had no idea what she was going to do. So I listened to the audiobook. I started to read it, and then I had to switch to the audiobook because it was, you know, you slog through it a little bit. It's really interesting, but it's a tough one.
Yeah.
But walking around my neighborhood and listening to it, was okay. And then she sent me the script, and I loved it. I was just like, she did it. This is so cool. We're on this woman's journey. She's writing a book. She's struggling to write this book, and everyone's telling her she can't. And getting into her head when she's researching, I was just like, brilliant. You did it. So, you know, once I read the script, it kind of clicked in for me, and I was on board and excited.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what were those first conversations like with Ava in terms of, I mean, setting the tone for this? Because, I mean, you obviously you're carrying over a lot of the themes from the book into the film. And I'm just curious how you wanted to balance those sort of those two properties.
Yeah, you know, we didn't talk too much, but we, you know, the conversations we had prior to her shooting and sort of while she was shooting a little bit were mainly about Isabel. And we didn't talk so much about the bigger set pieces and Nazi Germany and some of the larger scale scenes. And it was more about Isabel and her quiet personal story, because that's something we're used to. You know, I Will Follow was our first narrative film we did like 10 years ago. And then we did a film called Middle of Nowhere, both quiet, intimate stories about one person's journey and internal and things going on around her. But the discussions we had initially were just really letting the audience engage with this character and being on this journey with her, you know, and that's the foundation of the film. Everything comes from that. So, you know, it was just like, she just said, kind of do what you do, you know, get in there and make it emotional and tell Isabel's story. And then everything else kind of comes from that.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so talk to me about the challenge of this film in comparison to, I mean, like you said, I mean, this is one of your many collaborations with Ava, but I'm curious what the challenge for you was for this particular project.
I think it was sort of what I was just talking about. It was the balance of this quiet film, very quiet, because it was about a woman who had a family, but things started to happen and her family members started to pass away. And so, and they were a major support system for her. And so when that support started to shed away a little bit, it becomes a really internal film, especially because the research that she's doing is all in her mind, and she's trying to work this out. She has her cousin Marion, which is this huge outlet and someone to talk to and someone to bounce ideas off of. But you know, it was this balancing of the two kind of extremes, because it's such an intimate movie, but then it's such a large scale movie at the same time. There's sort of no middle. You know, it's like this huge Nazi Germany set in 1930s, and then we're back with her by herself. So balancing those two worlds was definitely the biggest challenge by far. We needed it to be grounded, and we needed the film to lead with Isabel's journey, her internal journey and her struggle. But we needed the bigger set pieces and the bigger story pieces to feel natural. You know, we didn't want to feel like a different movie. And we needed it to feel like it was coming from her, you know? So sometimes Ava and I move scenes around and intercut to get the time down or to fix issues. We didn't move a lot of scenes in this one, except some of these sort of entry points into this historical moments, but it was this balancing of the two that we needed to, that took the most time to work. And that was the, sort of the most trial and error. And we were working on it, you know, until the the final day, really.
Yeah, no, I mean, just, I mean, transitioning from those set pieces to the internal life of Isabel, I it is really just such a tricky sort of it's that still sort of boggles me in terms of how effortless it was, because I mean,
oh good.
Well, what's interesting to me is, I mean, obviously we're seeing, we're kind of just, it's a mirror. We're just looking at, yeah. You know, this was, I mean, however many years ago, I mean, we're still dealing with the same thing. So it's almost like you're just stepping into the next frame in a sense, and not really being, having to sort of like twist your brain around and think, oh, this isn't such a distant past. Like this is our, yeah. I mean, this is our present. This could be our future. So, I think it, and then I think also the sequences where you're able to sort of combine the two elements, I think are just absolutely wonderful and, really put it into perspective again too. And I'm curious, with that, I mean, when did that decision come into play with, sort of introducing the different worlds together, and the sort of quote unquote meetings of the individuals?
You're talking about just getting to the historical moments?
Yeah, like yeah. Sort of towards the end where you reach like where Isabel's walking out the door and she's sort of encompassed or surrounded by the people that we've sort of met along the way, and it's and I'm just curious what sort of made that decision. And I mean, you see that earlier with her and the little boy at the pool, which it was such a powerful scene. So I'm just curious, where did that decision come into play?
Yeah, that's you know, early in the film, Isabel, very early in the film, she's talking to Blair Underwood's character, New York Times editor, I think. And, you know, he's asking her to write a piece about Trayvon Martin. But she doesn't want to do it because she wants to do something bigger than just a piece. You know, it's not like she doesn't want to write about Trayvon Martin, but she just had all these ideas swirling in her head that she knew would lead to a bigger idea, which eventually ended up being the thesis. But she had a line in there where she says, I want to be in the story. I want to be inside the story. And it's sort of a callback at the end when she, after the Albright scene, after all the pool scene and Albright sitting on the grass, she walks right into the story, you know, and she sits there with him and sort of kind of comes back around in that moment. And then that sort of leads into her walking out of the steps of her house and talking about caste. And she has all of those people around her. And it's powerful, you know, in the script, it was strong, you know, but we weren't sure if that's how we wanted to end. We knew we wanted to end on Trayvon Martin's face, but there were a couple of endings that we were sort of shooting around. But there was something about her walking around in these historical figures, tipping their cap, sort of saying thank you. And they felt alive, you know, and they felt like, even though they're actors and it's a movie, it felt real. You know, you feel like the spirits of these people sort of acknowledging what Isabel's trying to do, and especially Trayvon, that last shot where he's looking at the camera. I don't even see the actor in there. It feels like him, you know, and sort of, thank you for telling my side of the story, you know. So that was something that, well, was shooting around in the script, and we kind of went back and forth a few times, but Isabel being in the story is something that we felt strongly that, you know, wanted to sort of end in that way.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. Now to sort of put that all into perspective now, I that really is just such a sort of beautiful transition. But in the script, was it always going to be Trayvon starting out the film. I obviously, you just said that ending the film had there a variety of different endings that could have you could have landed on. Was that how the beginning was always sort of planned?
Yeah. And it's funny because a lot of the times, you know, like I said, we don't move scenes around too much, but for some reason in a lot of Ava's films, we always end up mixing up the beginning, you know, from, for whatever reason she writes in her scripts, the first acts sort of are the hardest to reconcile. And so we end up mixing things around, but this moment, the Trayvon Martin moment was something she always wanted to be as the starting point of the film. And, you know, we did talk about it and shoot around other ideas, but she was pretty adamant about Trayvon being the, you know, the first frame and the last frame of the film. So yeah, that kind of never changed. And we always felt strongly, and we started showing people and people were reacting to it. And, you know, some people might have a different opinion about how the film should star this sort of big idea, but we felt that, you know, because he was the sort of inciting incident for her, the Trayvon Martin's murder, to really start the process.
Mm. And was in this particular film, I mean, where, what was a challenging sequence for you that, that maybe there are a ton of challenging sequences to go through, but was there one that stuck out to you most in terms of nailing the tonality? Because it's so interesting in the third act, you kind of rip away the Isabel character in terms of seeing her and really just sort of letting it flow out like a narrative. And mm-hmm. I just thought that was so well done, and we're just walking through the pillars of the cast system. But I'm curious for you, what was the challenging sequence that to get sort of tonally correct, and not just creating the two different worlds of or the set pieces, but just sort of beyond that and just the edit?
Yeah, I think that's the one that came to mind. It was this whole sort of last 30 minutes that we worked a lot, and it we did not nail it for so long, and Ava, you know, she just kept saying we just got to keep pushing this, because, you know, it's the thesis, her writing the thesis. And it initially, and I think the way it was in the script, it was sort of she starts to write, she gets out the board, she's writing the pillars, and we go through Nazi Germany, and then that's over. This is how it initially was conceived. And then we go into the India caste system and talk about that. And then we go into America's system. And then, into the Middle Passage scenes, the slave ship. And so they were kind of back to back to back. And it was linear, and it wasn't feeling like a big payoff, and it wasn't feeling active. And we just kept working it, and we were not happy. And then sort of toward the end of the process, we just sort of said, let's just try to really mix it up and compare all these images. And when I started intercutting the sequence, you know, it's a little bit of Middle Passage, back to her writing, then it's into Nazi Germany, then it felt like really active. And when we slapped these images together of a Nazi official up against George Zimmerman, or up against in India the men cleaning the latrines, we didn't need to say much. It just, there it is, put them together and you get it. Doesn't matter the era. Because George Zimmerman, his mentality when he was playing policeman in that neighborhood with regards to the caste system in America, his mentality was, I'm here, and what this black boy is doing is down here, and he can't be doing that, and I'm the one in charge. I think the Nazi officials in Germany, even though it was a different era and a different situation, similar mentality as far as the caste system goes. So it doesn't matter what era and what the situation, you look at all these three caste systems and slap them all together and mix them up and make it tight, and it really becomes clear, the thesis and the comparison between the three systems. So that was, I think, our biggest challenge, but also sort of the biggest payoff. Once we nailed it, we felt really good about it. And you know, it's hard to grasp this caste system idea. And we don't expect people to. We expect conversations to come from this, and start the learning process. But I think in that third act, it's something visceral and visual and something that you just feel, you know? So it was a hard one, but I'm proud of that final act, very much so.
Absolutely. And I think sort of going back in terms of a scene that stands out to me is, I mean, with Niecy Nash sort of having her say, I get what you're saying, I get the 10-minute version of it, but how do you explain it in like a couple of sentences? And it's so hard to do. And so it is very interesting in retrospect with this film, how, I mean, you're tackling probably one of the greatest issues of the day, and really having to sum it up in 2.5 hours and say, this is what we're trying to accomplish, and this is what we mean by this. And I think that third act, like you said, really does, even though obviously it's 30 minutes, it still does a wonderful explanation of what this is and putting it into perspective outside of America and outside of our sort of own caste system. So
good. Yeah, and it's funny about that scene you're talking about with Niecy Nash. Remember we had discussions about that scene early, and in my first instinct was, I don't want Isabel to explain it so early. I wanted to sort of materialize more, and sort of reveal in the third act, you know, everything that was swirling around in her head. But quickly I realized, and through screenings with friends and filmmakers, that people needed that scene. They needed to live vicariously through Niecy and tell Isabel, hey, quit it with the high level vocabulary and just tell me what this is. And I remember in a screening for filmmaker friends, they're like, you have to have this scene. And I was the only one saying, no, let's put it off. But in retrospect, you need it, and it helps.
And I'm curious, in this particular film, if there's a scene that really encompasses the seed or the genesis of this idea for you, and that really is a standout in terms of maybe something that will always be something that replay. Obviously, this will all your films sort of probably replay in your brain to some extent. But for you, is there a scene that just sort of stands out in terms of what this movie is trying to encompass?
You know, the first scene that comes to mind is the Trayvon Martin murder. That was one we worked quite a bit too, because and this was something Ava really wanted to hammer home, was the opening scene of the film is his night, his side of the story. He wasn't doing anything. He was eating candy and walking and talking to a friend. And he was innocent, and he was not doing anything wrong. We showed that. And we see, I think in the beginning, we see a George Zimmerman's truck drive by him, but we don't show you George or get into the incident, and then we get into the movie. The scene, when we come back to it, and we actually play the actual audio of the 911 call under that, which is really eerie. But initially, I just kind of cut the scene and it was intense, but we really wanted to juxtapose that scene with the opening scene and show how different George Zimmerman's point of view of the scene through his eyes versus Trayvon's eyes. And so we set it up as a innocent boy walking, and then later in the movie we come back to George Zimmerman and see it through his eyes, and he's telling the 911 dispatcher that this guy's up to something. He's got to be doing something. I'm gonna go get him. And you know, at that point we realize that he's not doing anything, and just laying the 911 audio under that and cutting back to Isabel listening to the tape and then back to Trayvon. And it was something that we worked for a while and sort of took a long time to materialize. But, you know, that George Zimmerman's outlook and his mentality, I think, encapsulates a lot of the caste system and how you can explain the caste system. And so I think that's a scene that I think about a lot and how it compares to what really happened.
Mm. And then final question for you. Obviously you want this to be something that people have conversations about, and people have already had conversations about the book itself and the film as it screens. And I'm just curious, beyond the conversation of it, what do you hope that audiences take away from this particular film?
You know, I noticed a change in myself. I remember one day I was in the airport, and you see all kinds of people in the airport, you know, rich, poor, brown, white, black, every kind of person you see in the airport. And I started to really clock my assumptions that have been conditioned inside of me for my whole life. And it's nothing crazy, just little things. You know, look at a janitor versus someone walking through who looks like they have a lot of money. You know, the way that you sort of have your first impressions about people. And I remember just walking around, just really clocking how I felt and what these sort of thoughts that would come to my mind without even me trying to think them. It was just, we're conditioned a certain way. And I'm not talking about racism, you know? And so I hope that people watch this film and do that same thing and just be aware of how you are thinking about other people who might be in a different class than you or a different social situation, economic situation. And be aware of it. And once you're aware of it, you sort of start to realize sort of repercussions that come from that, big picture repercussions, like large groups thinking. If I'm thinking that a little bit, then what are large groups thinking? And it's something that we really got to get away from. And we have to decondition ourselves from judging people because of the way they look or because of where they are in the world. And I don't know. When we did 13th, something changed for me there. I got to see the line, the historical line from slavery to mass incarceration. Oh, okay. So yes, slavery was a long time ago, but the effects of it are very present and happening right now all over. And this, the caste system it's less clear. It's less in your face. It's invisible, but it's more powerful. And, because of it being invisible, because even good people who have great intentions are victims of this sort of caste system, you and me right now, this whole thing. So in awareness, I think, is the first step. And I hope people take that.
Absolutely. 100%. I think the line in the film, and I think you might have just said it too, it's not racism, it's caste, which yeah. is
yeah.
That sort of sums everything up, because once you get the broader picture of it, every society is like this, and it's not just our own. So Spencer, I want to thank you so much for chatting with me today. This has just been such an honor and a pleasure.
Thanks so much, Jackson. Appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning into this episode. This podcast was hosted and produced by yours truly, Jackson Vickery, but a very special thank you to Sterling Gavinsky for the theme music and to Carly Haney for the artwork. We will see you next time.